For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to WTIC's Pet Talk. Today, Lori Fast takes your pet behavior questions. This is a show for you and your best friend. Call in now at 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, or star WTIC from your cell phone if you have AT&T Wireless. And now, Pet Talk.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Pet Talk. You're listening today to Lori Fass, and this is the behavior edition of the show. We've had a little bit of an irregular rotation. People who listen to the show regularly know that sometimes I'm on the air, sometimes Dr. Dennis from Bloomfield Animal Hospital is on the air, and I'm going to be on next week as well, and then the following week, Dr. Dennis will be on. So it's often and even I'm on one week, she's on the next week, but sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And I always suggest if people want to know when I'm going to be on the air that they can check out my website, which is LoriFassDogTraining.com. And that also contains contact information for me if you wanted to talk to me, but you can't get through to me on the air, or for some reason, you'd rather not be on the air. But if you feel like being on the air and you have a question, I'd love to hear from you. I'm here today to take your calls. And the numbers to call in are 860-522-WTIC, which is 860-522-9842. So I'm here till 2, so we've got plenty of time. And sometimes people call in at the end of the show, and sometimes I can talk to them and sometimes not. So, you know, if you have something you want to call in about, you want to share, or you have a question, try to get on right away, and then I can definitely get your call, get you on the air, and that'd be great. So anyway, I read some kind of a, I don't even know if I would call it a news story, but some information that I thought sounded pretty crazy. And it was about a litter box killing a cat. And a lot of times there are stories that go around online that really are just either made up, fabricated, exaggerated, kind of pretty much off the beaten trail. So it sounded a little bit fishy to me, but it definitely caught my interest. So, of course, I researched into this. And apparently there are, and I know that I've talked about them before, probably quite some time ago, litter boxes, they're referred to as robot litter boxes that are self-cleaning in a variety of ways. So one way might be that when the cat leaves the box, there's a rake that kind of goes across the litter and then scoops whatever little ball in the scoopable litter into some little tray. There's another kind that kind of looks like a washing machine, and it when the cat leaves the litter box, it closes and then turns in some kind of way, and that gets rid of the, again, all of this is around scoopable litter. And apparently there's another type that is self-washing and comes with some kind of cleaning solution. And, you know, the exact mechanics of this, I don't know. But what I did find out is that cats dying in these automatic litter boxes is actually a true fact. In one case, there was somebody who had two cats, and they had one of these self-cleaning litter boxes. And the cats, somehow the cleaning fluid was seeping out and leaking somewhere where the cats got their feet in it and were licking it. And one of the cats got very, very sick, and the other cat got very, very sick and died as a result of ingesting this cleaning solution. And of course, you know, they contacted the manufacturer, and the manufacturer said, oh, well, you know, this is harmless to cats. Well, apparently not. So I don't know what was in that cleaning solution, but whatever it was not harmless to cats. And then maybe even more alarming than that, there was a case of a cat that was going into one of these litter boxes that I described, sort of looking like the washing machine where the lid closes when the cat leaves. And there's supposed to be a variety of sensors to know if there's a cat in there or not. Well, the sensor failed, obviously. And what happened was the cat got stuck in the door and it crushed the cat, which, you know, I mean, that the cat died. It was pretty awful. And some people were saying, well, you know, that's happening with these off brands and the more expensive brands don't do that. And honestly, I haven't researched it enough to say that that's true or not true. I know some of these fancy robot-like litter boxes cost $600, $800, something like that. Some of them cost maybe $300 or $400, which is still quite a lot for a litter box. But supposedly, the ones that are more upscale don't fail. But let's be honest here. If you're talking about any sort of technology, things can go wrong. It's not 100%. And obviously, in this case, if something goes wrong, it can be deadly. So, you know, I can't say that I would endorse these kinds of things. And if you have something like this, you might want to be very, very careful or reconsider whether you want to use it at all. And if you ever thought about getting one, you might want to rethink it. And in my research on these kinds of things, I also read what Jackson Galaxy, who is a cat behavior celebrity expert, how he weighed in on this. And I like Jackson Galaxy. I think he has a lot of very good ideas. If you don't know who that is, he had a show with crazy cats that he was helping giving advice to. He has products. And a lot of his ideas are very, I think, sound and creative and helpful. But anyway, he had a very, very good point, which was that even if these robot litter boxes are not actually killing your cat, if they go off at the wrong time or they make weird noises, this could cause your cat to now be afraid of the litter box. And not using the litter box, fear of the litter box is probably, well, not maybe not fear, but not wanting to use the litter box for whatever reason seems to be a very, very common behavior problem with cats. So I don't know, you want to contribute to it by adding some weird litter box that's going to be scary and create a problem where one didn't exist before. And then the other point that he had was that sometimes we know what's wrong with our cats and dogs, but they don't generally use litter boxes. But we know what's wrong with our cats, or we can tell something is wrong by looking at the condition of what their pee and poo is. And so if it's immediately getting scooped away, you don't know that your cat has diarrhea, or you might not know that your cat is constipated or that there was blood in the urine or something like that. So if you have to scoop it out yourself and look at it, even though that's maybe not your highlight of your day, it does give you valuable information for your cat. And come on, guys, you know, if you want a pet, I know my favorite thing with my animals is not cleaning up after they're pooping and peeing. That is my least favorite task. I can certainly vouch for that. But I'm going to do it anyway because I love them, and that's part of having a pet. So I just thought I would share that because it did seem at first like possibly far-fetched, but the more I looked into it, the more sense it made, because the mechanism of closing the door or leaking out cleaning fluid, I could see easily where that would be a problem. So, you know, if you have one of these, you know, really, really be careful. Consider maybe even getting rid of it. If you ever thought about getting one, maybe think again. And if you never heard of it, well, now you know. So anyway, I think maybe we're going to go to a break on that note, and we will be right back. Hello, and welcome back to Pet Talk on WTIC. You're listening to Lori Fass on this behavior edition of the show. I'm here live in the studio on this October 12th, and I'm here till 2 o'clock, and happy to take your call. And if you'd like to call, the numbers are 860-522-WTIC, or same thing, 860-522-9842. And as I've always mentioned in the past, if you'd like to get a hold of me off the air, just check my website, LoriFassDogTraining.com. So I wanted to talk a little bit about reviews, contracts, and guarantees, because all of those things would be something that, well, you might want to check reviews. I think most of us check reviews. But let's say you are looking to get a dog, for example, or let's say you're looking to get a training service. You might want to be looking at these things. And reviews are great, except they're not always what they seem to be. And I'm just going to give a couple of examples. So, for example, I have had services and products that I've purchased and then been solicited by the person I got it from to write a review. And they're very nice. And in some cases, they even are going to give me a free product if I write them a review, or they're going to give me a coupon or a discount, or they're just going to act like, oh, would you write me a review? That would be so helpful. And if somebody talks to you like, oh, you know, I could really use the help. Could you please write me a review? Under those circumstances, who's not going to say something positive? Let's face it. Okay. And then you start reading some of these reviews, and this is, of course, for products, but, you know, this could apply to other things too, where the review literally, even though it's a 5-star review, will say, well, you know, I really haven't gotten the product or used the service, but I'm really looking forward to it. And so clearly, whoever is writing this review is not in a position to be writing a review. So because business is so generated by reviews, I'm saying that a lot of places aggressively solicit to get reviews that may or may not be reflecting exactly in the rawest possible form what people's experience is. Now, here's something that I learned. I met someone who actually had a job coming up with various different email and identities for the purpose of writing reviews. So if a service or a product wanted to booster themselves, they would hire this particular person to write all these great reviews. And conversely, and this one is, you know, that's bad enough, but conversely, this person was also solicited to write bad reviews for the competition. So, you know, sometimes you might read a bad review and say, oh, well, that sounds really bad. And maybe it is, maybe it's not. So in some cases, reviews are literally made up for better or for worse. And then that's not to mention that, you know, somebody's going to be mad about something. You know, I mean, how many times do you watch like a YouTube video about somebody getting mad about the most ridiculous possible thing and maybe even calling the police because they're that ridiculous? So, you know, if you're dealing with the general public, you're going to run across people who are going to get bent out of shape over something completely trivial that doesn't matter at all. But those people can write reviews. So, you know, you can look at reviews and say, oh, my God, look at this. They have, you know, these more than one-star review, that must mean they're bad. Maybe or maybe not. So, you know, sometimes you can actually read the content of the review and get some kind of a feel for it. Sometimes the reviews that are good or bad are well-written and well-spoken and explain exactly in a way that makes sense why this particular product or service would be good or bad. And sometimes they're just very generic and, okay, well, maybe, I don't know. But I would suggest that rather than just relying on reviews, because these things can be solicited, I think there's even a place where you can buy reviews. I don't know about that, but I do know about the person who was hired to write reviews. So let's say you're checking something out. What you might want to do, and I do this all the time because, you know, I see all these different ads and they sound great, you know. People that are good at advertising make everything sound great. So, and I've been fooled. Let's be honest, I have been fooled. I will look up the product or service and say in the search, I'll write scam. So whatever the service or product is, scam. Or do a search, whatever the product is, complaints. So I'm specifically looking for if it's a scam or if it's a complaint. And when a product is being sold on a website, there are actually websites that rate whether what the scam score is, if it's worth your trouble or it's not worth your trouble. So if you're looking something up and you write that in, you type that in, you can get a lot more information than you might have thought that you could have gotten. That's a good screening process. And since doing that, there have been a lot of things that I thought sounded pretty good. And then I wrote that in and I said, oh, maybe not so much. Good thing I did this. And then this is something that people used to do a lot, but is not necessarily in the forefront so much anymore, and that is check the Better Business Bureau. So the Better Business Bureau, quite a few years ago, I don't remember how many years ago, I had kind of a bone to pick with them because what they would do is they would give ratings to businesses, and they still do. You know, you could be a D or you could be an A, you could be a B minus. And what they used to do is if you were not a member of the Better Business Bureau, your score would be docked. So if you were not a member of the Better Business Bureau, even if you had no complaints whatsoever, the best that you could do would be get a B. Okay. And the Better Business Bureau, ironically enough, got in trouble for that. So they don't do that anymore. But they do keep records of, if people make complaints. So, you know, if you want to check into something and you've written in scam, you've written in complaints, just check the Better Business Bureau. Real simple, easy. And that's not a bad place to look. So, you know, looking at different kinds of reviews, may be helpful. Not telling you not to. Take it with a grain of salt, but look a little deeper beneath the surface. Now, I wanted to talk about contracts and guarantees, so I'm going to probably not be able to get into all of it before the break, but I want to talk a little bit about contracts because specifically regarding dog training. I don't know if I think there are contracts, but there, I'm going to say in that case, the contract is more like a guarantee if you're purchasing a dog. But a lot of dog training contracts are non-refundable and lock you in. And some of these contracts are extremely expensive. When I say extremely expensive, I'm talking $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $10,000 for a dog training contract. I mean, I don't know how many people need $10,000 worth of dog training. I mean, that's a lot of dog training. So why would you want to sign a contract where this is non-refundable? And honestly, I don't know how legal that is or how well written the contract is. I know that if you sign a contract in your home, I think you have 3 days where you can cancel the contract before it becomes legal and binding. But if you sign something like that, yeah, you may be putting yourself in a very bad position. And I have been meeting people who have signed these sorts of contracts and ended up regretting it and ending up, you know, feeling like they can get this unlimited service of something that as they come to have a better understanding of it, they don't even want it, okay? But now they're kind of stuck with it. So it'd be like if you signed a contract for unlimited crummy-tasting corn chips and you're going to get all these packages of corn chips forever and you don't like them, you don't want to eat them, and they're making you sick, but you signed the contract, so you're going to have to stay with it. So I really want people to think about that. I think when something is presented to you as being great and wonderful and you know, you get emotionally attached to it. Sounds like a great idea. And I don't even think people sometimes think through that they're signing a legal document that's binding them to something that they may deeply regret. So I want people to really think long and hard before you're going to sign something like that, because things are not always what they seem to be. So we're going to need to go to a break, and we'll be right back.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome back to WTIC's Pet Talk. You're listening to Lori Fass on this behavior edition of the show, and I'm here today to take your calls or questions at 860-522-WTIC, 860-522-9842. And you got about another 20 minutes if you want to call in. If not, well, then I'm just going to move on to my next topic. Before the break, I said I was going to talk about reviews, which I did. I was going to talk about contracts, which I did. But I also want to talk about guarantees, because I think when people hear that something is guaranteed, it kind of implies that there's nothing that could go wrong, that this, when something is guaranteed, it almost seems like that means there's nothing wrong with it. It's guaranteed. But that's not what a guarantee means. What guarantee means is that when and if something goes wrong, this is what will happen. Okay. So many, many years ago, there was a scam being put out for people at a pet store where people wanted to buy canaries that sang, and canaries that sing are male canaries. Female canaries apparently don't sing. So there was a guarantee that if you buy this canary and you bring it home and it doesn't sing, well, we'll replace the canary. Okay, well, you know, that sounds pretty good if you want a singing canary. So what the store was doing was letting you bring back the canary and just giving you another one. And then that one didn't sing either. Well, you could bring that one back and you could get another one. And that one didn't sing either. And the question then becomes, how many times are you going to go back and get another non-singing canary? Probably there's going to get to a point where you're going to say, well, forget it. But that's what the guarantee said. The guarantee didn't say, if you bring home this canary and it doesn't sing, we'll give you your money back. That's not what the guarantee said. Okay, so a lot of times, for example, let's say you're buying a dog from somewhere. Maybe the guarantee might say, if this dog is, you know, comes down with all sorts of this problem or that problem, we'll give you another dog. Well, most people, if they have a pet for a certain amount of time, are not going to want to give the dog back to get another dog. And if it's anything like the singing canary scam, you don't want to take a dog back that you now are attached to and then potentially get another dog that may end up with the same problems or worse. So that's really a horrible guarantee. So, but on the surface, if you don't think it through, it sounds like, oh, that sounds like they must, you know, be legitimate because they're going to give you a replacement. But I think that is a horrible, horrible guarantee. It's not like, you know, a TV where you can just bring the TV back and they give you another one. And if the TV isn't that great and, you know, you get two more TVs till you get the right one, that's not fun, but that's not the end of the world. But if you're talking about a living creature, that's a whole nother matter. Some guarantees will be, we will pay for, you know, whatever congenital problems if it's been proven by a veterinarian up to a certain age. Well, there are certain types of things that might not even be discovered until after a certain age. And so you know, again, it sounds like, well, that might be great, but not necessarily. If let's say this goes to a year, this guarantee of, you know, we're going to pay for your vet bills for congenital defects up to a year, and then your dog is 15 months old, and now we discover it has some serious problem that is inherited. Well, the year is up, so I guess too bad for you. So a lot of these guarantees, just in my opinion, are put out there to more as a sales tactic than as to actually protect you. Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes people don't honor good guarantees and help with vet bills early on. But a lot of times, you know, again, it is kind of a sales tactic. It's if you're selling dogs for huge amounts of money, and so you have to kind of take a hit when something goes wrong in the cases where people are bringing you up on this, it's still worth it, all right? But I guess what I'm trying to say is if somebody is giving you a guarantee, look at what that means. What does that guarantee mean? Same thing with, you know, I had talked about signing contracts in regards to dog training. So if you sign a contract that says, you're going to pay this thousands of dollars up front, but we guarantee to keep coming and helping you however long you need it. Well, let's say what you're getting for information is not helping you. It's like back to the canary thing. You know, the canary doesn't sing. Well, we'll give you another one that doesn't sing either. So you're trying to get information. You're trying to get a service, and maybe it's not helping you, or you don't like it, or you, for whatever reason, they just keep offering you the same thing over and over again. That's not really a guarantee, in my opinion. That's kind of, you know, I mean, under certain circumstances, maybe it would work out. Maybe you do need the extra help. Maybe the extra help is good, but it's kind of a slippery slope here. And I think that people tend to make decisions emotionally, especially when it comes to a pet, because we are all who love our pets, emotionally invested in them. And if we get excited about, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do that for them, and, you know, we're going to get a new one, it's really easy to be convinced that something is much better than it really is. And something along those same lines of contracts is when people say that their dog has papers. And a paper is a piece of paper. There's AKC, which is, you know, probably the biggest dog registry or the most common popular dog registry. And I remember years ago, somebody had bought a dog from a pet store, and they had this pedigree, which is the list of all the ancestors of the AKC dogs. And I called someone who was a researcher of pedigrees. And I said to this person, okay, so if we present you with this this paperwork, can you verify that this is right or this is true? And basically, I got laughed at because it was explained to me that papers are papers, and that's all they are. So I'll just give you one example of how paperwork could be falsified. Let's say I have a male dog who has an AKC registration number, and I have a female dog with another AKC registration number. Let's say that they have a litter of puppies, and let's say, therefore, they are eligible to have the puppies be registered with the AKC because I have the information, the registration numbers of the mother and father. And let's say the litter is, there are five puppies that were actually born to the litter. I can send to the AKC that there were 10 puppies in this litter, and I'm going to get 10 certificates to register 10 puppies. So I can take the other five and apply it to some other dogs that maybe aren't AKC registered or who knows where, but I have those on hand to use. Or let's say, you know, I have these same two dogs, and let's say the father dog, whose number and registration and all of that I have, and let's say he dies. Okay, I still have all that information. So now I'm going to have another litter of puppies, but by some other dog, who knows who this is, I don't know. But I send in the registration information about the dog that has passed away. there are no inspectors that come out and say, oh, well, let's see if these dogs are really who they say they are. Now, there have been introduction of DNA to some of these registrations and to validate certain health issues and that kind of thing. How thoroughly that's been used at this point, I don't know, but I certainly know that these are things that have happened before. And there are also registries that you can buy paperwork from that are nothing. They're absolutely nothing. You just send in a fee and they send you a paper and says, oh, here you go. You're registered with what? I don't even know. And so, there are so many nuances to this. I don't want to go on too much about it. But my point being that just because you're getting a registration or a paper, you really need to look a little bit beneath the surface of the situation here. And unfortunately, there are just so many different types of situations where people are scammed and ripped off and, you know, paying ridiculous amounts of money for products and services that I'm just really counseling you to just think carefully, don't make an emotional decision, kind of think it through. If you're not sure, you know, ask people who are experienced that really can give you good advice, because there's a lot of ways you can get ripped off in this world, including with things having to do with our pets. So anyway, on that cheerful note, I think we're going to go to a break. Hello, and welcome back to Pet Talk on WTIC. There's so many renditions of that song, Hound Dog. This one was Tracy Chapman, and I thought that was an unusual version, so I wanted to share that with you guys. Anyway, we're almost wrapping up this show today. I'm going to be back again next weekend on the 19th, and on the 26th will be the veterinary edition with Dr. Dennis. So if you can save up whatever questions you have for either me next week or Dr. Dennis the following week. And as I mentioned before, I do talk to people off the air and answer emails, and a lot of you have taken me up on that. And if you want that contact information, the best way to get it would be to go on my website, LoriFassDogTraining.com. So as a matter of fact, I got a call today from someone who was very concerned about his five-month-old dog who wasn't being housebroken. And apparently he had gotten another dog, well, maybe 5 months earlier. So he had two young dogs. And I guess where he was feeling confused or getting frustrated is the first puppy was very easy to train. And all he basically did to train that puppy was just take it out frequently, like take the puppy out every hour. And the puppy said, okay, sounds like a plan. And that was that. Whereas this puppy, the puppy that I was getting the call about, wasn't doing that. And so I asked him some questions. And one of the questions was, is the puppy crate trained, meaning it can be in a crate and is okay and will settle in and keep the crate clean? And the answer to that question was yes. And then the next question I wanted to know is the puppy doing any of its business outside? Because sometimes people will tell me that their dog goes outside and won't do anything outside, and that's a bigger problem. So the answer to that question was yes, this puppy is doing most of its business outside, but every once in a while, and I guess it was kind of narrowed down to maybe once a day, the puppy would wander off and go pee on the floor somewhere. And so keeping in mind that this is a five-month-old puppy, I said, well, honestly, I don't know why you're letting this puppy just wander around your house. For one thing, not only is it not trustworthy with housebreaking, but usually 8 to 10 months is an age when dogs are most destructive. So a lot of people will give their dogs freedom when they've demonstrated that they seem to be getting the housebreaking part of it around 6 months, typically. And then only to find out a couple months later that their dogs are just demolishing something or everything, who knows what. And so when I, again, asked more specific questions, the dog was at home. His stepson was watching it, but not really watching it, and watching TV or doing something on the computer. And the dog was wandering all around the house all by itself and going and peeing on the floor. And, you know, the fact that he had this other puppy that got housebroken based on taking it out frequently led him to believe that this second puppy's behavior was abnormal. And I said, actually, this puppy is doing quite well because mostly it's going outside. It's keeping its crate clean because some dogs don't. And that's a whole nother problem. I said, the answer is that you have to supervise this dog. You have to have it in the room with you, keep it there with a leash that you're holding on to. If you're too busy to do that, then put the dog in the crate, whether it's for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 10 minutes, it really doesn't matter. You don't have to just use a crate when you're going to sleep or when you're going out. You can use it for little short increments. And that was all he really needed to know. So, you know, I kind of talked myself out of a lesson there. But why am I going to set up a big, long, complicated training protocol when the answer is you just need to keep a better eye on your puppy and don't compare this puppy to your other puppy because they're all different. And some are easier to train than others. I'm sometimes actually kind of shocked and amazed at how cooperative some dogs are. And I don't often get to meet those dogs because, you know, those dogs are not something that those people don't really need my services. But I think sometimes people get frustrated when they realize that the time commitment, the supervision commitment, and all of that is exceeding what they had anticipated. All right. But you can't assume that that's what it's going to be if you had an easier dog. And that doesn't mean that a dog who needs more attention is bad or isn't going to eventually outgrow it. But puppies are tough. I mean, if you're not ready for that, you might want to consider maybe getting an older dog or a dog that was previously owned by someone. There are a lot of older dogs that, you know, people don't want to adopt because everybody wants to get a puppy. And puppies are adorable, but they are plenty of work. Believe me. So then I also got a call recently, and we ended up, in this case, we actually did a lesson because there was a lot that I could show them in person that would be hard over the phone. But they were very concerned because they adopted a dog that they didn't realize when they adopted it, but the dog was deaf. And they were thinking that being deaf was going to be a big complication in the training process. And the biggest complication with a dog who's deaf is getting them to look at you because you can't say their name and have them look at you, but there's other ways to signal them. So one way to signal them is you can get a collar that has a vibration and train the dog that if it feels the vibration, that it should look at you or come to you. You can also train a dog to look at you if you tap them. You can train a dog to look at you if you toss something at them, like a little beanbag or something like that. And dogs can understand hand signals, frankly, easier in some cases than words because we as humans talk a lot. And we talk to our dogs like they're humans. And I'm not going to say that dogs don't like being talked to, but very often they really don't understand exactly what we're getting at. And I think that is one of the number one ways that people confuse their dogs. And what was so funny with this particular dog that when I had the lesson and I got to meet them, it was a couple and their dog in person, they kept talking to the dog. And when a dog can hear, I will say, well, you're saying too many things. That's confusing. Just say one thing, say it clearly, follow it through. And they were, stop doing that. What are you doing? Look at me over here. Don't. And I had to say, well, you know, the dog doesn't even hear you, right? And so even when a dog doesn't hear people, people still can't seem to resist the urge to say too many things. So in some ways, you know, keeping it simple, keeping the signals clear, following through in such a way that your dog understands what it is you want them to do by some lure or some physical positioning or something like that. That's the same whether your dog hears you or doesn't hear you. And, you know, dogs that are deaf can be really, really tuned in and can be expected to pretty much do everything that a dog who can hear you can do. And the biggest obstacle, as I said, is if they get loose, and that can be true with the dog that hears you, that chooses to be selectively deaf if they haven't had enough training. But it doesn't, just because an animal is deaf, that absolutely 100% does not mean that they can't be trained. And I'm sure there are people who are listening who have dogs that are deaf. Either they were deaf as puppies, or in some cases, older dogs start becoming deaf. And, you know, you have to learn how to communicate with them differently. But that does not mean at all that they can't learn, that any sort of disability like that that an animal has is easily overcome with just clear, consistent communication. So those were some of the interesting conversations that I had with people this week. But as I say, you know, if you have a question or you have a problem or an issue, reach out. I'll be here next week. And as I say, you can call, get in touch with me off the air. And it's a beautiful day out there, so I hope you guys can enjoy the rest of your weekend. And thanks for tuning in.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.